그래서 도모 끊어놔야지. 끊어 개천문이 있어. 끊어 가르쳤는데 주유쇼세 연도변 따봐서 끊어놔도 개천문이 있어.
So, as a lot of you know, motivation, why you do anything is quite important, and it's therefore here too. One must be motivated either by renunciation, bodhicitta, or the right view. It's all right to say we need to have a positive motivation, but before we have a positive motivation, we need to see for ourselves the pros and cons of embracing a spiritual path and lacking one. So if one has if one is fully aware of tangible outcomes of and the benefits of spiritual path, then without needing to be reminded, you will have a positive motivation.
그래서
chi is the Tibetan word, the Sanskrit word is dharma, and although dharma has quite a few meanings, but here dharma means to change, to amend, to correct.
대화 되는 영화도 능하면 돼 봤다 가지고 진짜 나와요. 점멜렌티 칼라니 미 코사 영행도 토다 영행도 한 가지 로 수조 간데 있네요. 수조 대화진데 네. 네 칼에 잡아 능하지 문제 네 칼에 잡아 진짜 그래서.
So, first of all, let's understand that in terms of our human experience, our life experience, we are all alike, basically because day in and day out, we have a common instinct, common desire, that is to be happy and to not to have to confront, face problems, whether one is highly placed individually in society or whether one is at the bottom of the society. All individuals, not just humans, even including animals, we all have one thing in common, and that is to seek happiness. Related with the pursuit of happiness, we need to consider our mind. Mind is one of the many phenomena that we see in the world. Obviously, we don't see the mind, but we feel the mind. And now, of all things, of various kinds of phenomena, mind is crucial for our well-being, for our happiness, for the pursuit of happiness. Now, what is that mind like? Where does mind come from, and where does mind go to?
그래서 디손 남빌린티 가당 켜봐 인해도 제와싱에 뭉치주고 이 센팅도 제와스에 주로 제어 말했어. 이 제와싱에 또 휴치주대 남빌준 뛰는 날 하고 되는 자가 나네 자 켜봐도 지금에 제와 휴치 못 제어 그래서.
mind has received until the lately little attention in the academia world or in the, you know, in the Western world, scientific or humanity. Whereas in the East, mind has received utmost attention, particularly in ancient India, in the tradition of a Nalanda University. So at the moment we are all humans and we have lived some portion of our given lifespan, and now all of us will be gone from this world in a matter of 100 years. After 100 years, now what is going to happen to our mind? If you ask yourself this question, what do you think, or do you think that your mind will continue to exist, move on to exist, and experience various sensations of peace, happiness, or suffering? Or would you think that the mind will cease permanently at the point of death? In other case, whatever is your answer, what proof do you have for this?
Senji jante rogo mare don rogo re sewa tena driji moche chu ten rogo tena driji moche wa resi nambe jo yanchi na taa kasi rogo yi na ti rogo yi na kata na soso chati karin duyo ni chowa nipa di chayate de keche ma kasi.
So if you put believers into two blocks or into two blocks, those who say indeed mind continues to move on after the physical death, and to those who believe that the mind ceases at the point of death. And if both positions are considered, which position is supported by reason, and which position has more valid reasons to support that claim or the conclusion, you will find that the first position would have a far more reasons, logical propositions to support the claim that the mind continues to exist. And if the mind does continue to exist, now, what kind of preparation do you have? Are you fully prepared for the mind to go on and face the consequences? So what is absolutely plain at the moment in this life is, as said before at the outset, we have a strong desire for happiness, strong desire for freedom from suffering and so on. And that's quite obvious. Why do we have a strong desire for happiness and strong desire for freedom from suffering? Why do we have it? Because we have a mind, and it is in the innate nature of mind to have these two. So, that being the case, will the future mind, will the mind of ours in the future life be any different in its thinking from what it does now, it won't be any different in the future too. It will keep wishing for happiness, wishing for freedom.
所以，
if mind does move on to the next life, what proof do we have? As for the proof, where can we find the proof? Can we find for the continued existence of mind in the future life out in the jungle, in the forest? Of course not. It has to be, the proof has to be found within ourselves, within our physical body, and within our psychophysiological components. And now, anything for an effect, for a resultant effect to come about, it must have a cause. It must have a it must have a cause, and there must be great correspondence in likeness. There must be great correspondence in likeness between the cause and the effect. And that, the need for likeness, the need for correspondence in likeness between the cause and effect is crucial factor here.
他刚才那个人，俺都就是西巴的，那他人他把用过的，再刚才那俺都同步嘛，俺们西马他的西巴的了，那人们他把最大的那几个，你可能年年就写的，他西巴的用完人了，那啥都多多，热了是吧？样，那么搞不起了，样西巴用处理怎么的？太用不着。So
when we consider the likeness between cause and effect, in terms of our mind, let's talk about the cause of the mind when we were just born, the cause of the newly born baby. Where does the mind, where does the consciousness of the newly born child come from? Could it have come from matter, like stone, wood, and so on? If the mind of a newly born child comes from things like wood and stone, then there is no correspondence between the likeness of cause and effect. Then it could well be that at times or occasionally, even unrelated things like wood and stone can be the cause of our consciousness, and therefore by implication that they could also be animate at times. There would be that fallacy. So, external things like wood and stone, external matter, cannot be what is called the appropriating cause. The appropriating cause, which has a strong correspondence in likeness with its result. So we rule that out. Then let's consider if whether the appropriating calls of the consciousness or the mind of a newly born child is that of its parent. Are the minds of the child's parents the appropriating calls of the mind of the newly born baby? If that were the case, then the child's mind and parent's mind must be alike in every respect, in that if the parents are really clever, intelligent, children are also invariably clever, intelligent. If the parents are otherwise, children are also invariably otherwise. But more often than not, it's not the case. Quite educated parents may not have equally intelligent children and so on. So that means parents' mind cannot be what is called appropriating cause for the germination, for the existence of the newly born child. It is seen from Buddhist perspective, when everything else is considered, that the appropriating cause of the mind of a newly born child must be the mind of the mind must be the mind of a baby when it was in the tummy. So, in other words, okay, the mind of the newly born baby must have come from the mind of the child in the womb of the mother. In other words, the mind of the newly born baby could only come from its own prior type, its own mind. Okay, if somehow we feel comfortable in concluding that the mind of the newly born child must come from the mind of a baby about to be born who is still in the womb, then what about the mind of the baby about to be born? Where does its mind come from? Let's say its mind comes from a mind that was just conceived 9 months ago, or 9 months ago in the womb, and its mind, the mind of a child about to be born, could only be traced to its own type, and its own type is the mind that was conceived some 9 months ago. Or in other words, mind of a child, a mind just conceived in the womb. So where could the mind which just conceived in the womb come from? It couldn't come from any other source but its own type before it was conceived. Where was it before it was conceived? Let's bypass the intermediate existence. Bypassing intermediate existence, the mind which was conceived okay, just conceived, could only have come from the mind of a person who died a death. And so in this way, if the mind just conceived in the womb could only have come from mind of a being who died a death, so the mind, the two minds have the same thread, the same strand or continuum. So this is the line of logic pursued by Buddhist logicians, epistemologists, to establish, you know, that there are past and future lives. So, in this way, you could then keep tracing where did the mind of a person who died come from. Again, it has to go to its own source and to its again. Okay, in this way, you can keep tracing back in the past. And each time the mind took a rebirth, the very innate function of the mind is to seek a pleasurable sensation we call happiness or joy, and to avoid trouble, pain of body and mind. So in this way, at all times, or in other words, throughout beginningless existence, when the mind has existed seamlessly or incessantly, the mind has always pursued happiness. So this is one way how Buddhists feel comfortable in establishing the existence of a past life. Not only on top of this inference, which is used as a proof, there are also people in the world, in different parts of the world, who somehow remember their last life. And there are empirical evidence of people who have managed to locate where they came from, their kids and kin and so on. So that too points to existence of past life. So, in the world, in the mundane world and in the transmundane world, various events take place as a result of shepa, means consciousness, or mind or consciousness. In the world, in a where a lot of troubles take place. Why? In other words, negative mental factors, which are in themselves expression of mind, negative mental factors take hold of their primary mind, and due to which people are motivated, are propelled into doing all kinds of actions which lead to a great deal of suffering and problem for themselves and for others. So in other words, these are all doings of the mind. Positively speaking, it is also due to harnessing the potential mind has to grow for the better, to grow exponentially for the better, that the mind then develops unthinkable qualities that enlightened beings have. So from this we know that mind is the steering wheel or the driving force behind all actions, all events, positive and negative.
네, 센지 간 로얄에서 해도 센치야 세대는 쉬운 데 좀 해요.
So there's a very there's a strong connection between Buddhism and inner mind. It is Buddhism has all to do with the mind. And tapping into the rich potential of the mind and correcting the negative propensities and cultivating positive propensities. So when you change the mind, according to Buddha's own teaching, you correct the mind with reference to the four truths. It is simply obvious that mind cannot be changed for the better in the way you can fashion, you can carve in a wood, stone into beautiful shape and into aesthetic forms. The aesthetic beauty of the mind cannot be achieved in that way. The beauty of the mind, the rich potential of the mind, is to be harnessed by way of cultivating perspectives of the mind which corresponds with the fact on the ground. And if the perspectives in the mind do not correspond to the with the ground reality, then they cause problem. These are misinformation, and they do not marry the reality on the ground, so they cause problem. So then we fashion the mind by way of eradicating wrong perspectives of the mind, and then by letting the mind develop, factual perspective, if you like. So, it's vital for us to know Yuki Neluk means the ontological status of the object. That's a jargon. Ontological status of the object, that means how the ground reality exists, how an object exists. And unless we have precise knowledge, precise understanding of how a thing exists and what its ground, what its innate reality is, or the ground reality is, then the misperception of the object can lead to development of wrong perspective. And therefore, as mentioned before, understanding ground reality is vital, of which there are two types, conventional and ultimate.
네, 전다 공마도 공마도 내 생애들아. 네, 전다 공마도 공마도는 내 생 뭐 뭐지 했더니나 다 그 지역에 내와 매봐. 근데 전체 선호도 이해되고 된다 된 번도 그 정도면 나 저한테 네 전다 네 영지 타지비 전다 노지 네 대는 내버렸어. 다 대인지 민지네 시지 개체 말했어.
Understanding of the ontological status of the object, and that is how the object, how a phenomenon, how an entity exists in a real way, is crucial to development of a positive perspective. And therefore, Buddhist schools, of which there are four, therefore, Buddhist schools, of which there are four, have spent a great deal of time in defining, explaining what the truths are. And of truth, as mentioned before, there are two conventional or relative truth and ultimate or the definitive truth. So each of these four schools have come up with their own definition of what a conventional truth is, what an ultimate truth is. And anyway, to come to the point, the explanation of the ontological status of a phenomena given by what is called Prasangika Madhya, Prasangika Madhyamika, the consequentialist middle way, is valid, free of any logical fallacies. So, for us, it is quite imperative that we try to that we try to understand the true truths explained by this school. So as we have seen, the mind, our mind continues to move on from one lifetime to another lifetime to another lifetime to another lifetime. And therefore, what the mind experiences is what it gets from the action performed by the individual with that mind. And now, in our case, we are into our 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s. And so we have lived a great chunk of our life. Now, we are, relentlessly moving on towards the end of this life. How prepared do we feel for our happiness, for our welfare of the next lifetime? So if we don't feel prepared because somehow we have been preoccupied with material things all our life thus far, then we have missed out on a great opportunity.
Then
So when it comes to understanding this crucial thing that all sentient beings have, that is how our what our mind is like, and how the mind can be transformed and changed, only humans have the capacity to inquire about the nature of mind and how to transform the mind. Animals, you know, whilst they have a mind like we do, they don't have that capacity, and yet they are very smart in going about earning a living, going about, you know, searching food, building shelters. In that regard, in some ways, they are extremely clever. Despite the fact that they are clever in this, they have no way of knowing, captured, trapped in that body, in inquiring into the nature of mind and how to change the mind. So in the same way, if we have fared no better than animals in terms of you know, preparing for the next life, then it, as I said before, it's really unfortunate. So when it comes to transforming the mind, we need to do practice. And practice doesn't simply mean reciting prayers, reciting mantras, chanting prayers, and so on. These are rituals. Rituals can help a mind, but these are not the primary purpose of Buddhism. The primary purpose of Buddhism is to look within one's own mind and then protect the mind from negative propensities, develop strength within the mind itself to withstand negative influences, and to grow stronger in positive propensities. That process of transformation is true practice, true Dharma. Now, in Tibetan Buddhism, there is such thing called Lamrim, stages of the path, a body of teaching called stages of the path. The stages of the path is an overview of the process of a spiritual growth from ordinary state to really higher state. So in the Lamrim, in the beginning, the topics are about human existence, human life. And the Lamrim teachings talk a great deal about the value, the worth of this life. And it says, this human life that we have now is extremely, doncha means extremely purposeful and meaningful. In other words, it has a great potential. Secondly, it says this kind of life is extremely rare to find. Although we may continue to exist, it's not that we will find this human life again and again in every lifetime. Thirdly, it says human life, while it's precious, is highly perishable, highly ephemeral. So human life is said to be extremely meaningful and purposeful in that it has the capacity to look within and grow from within.
对，是他们家人们去做孙杨的，对，别个呢去送到钱了，老人的多么心里疼，总不能说那送小伙的是，
那是。
听说西街了，那他那些玩意儿带成南瓜嘛，带成南边去个一些站了，带成牛车做吞了，地段呢那马些吞了，然后也是送人家，应该过些现在带是他准备弄清我这种意思。
So this was just an introduction. His Holiness says has advised Buddhist teachers that when they go to the West and when they teach Lamrim, the stages of the path, one of the topics is called one of the topics is developing spiritual relationship with a guru or spiritual mentor. And His Holiness has advised Tibetan Buddhist teachers not to dwell too much on this, for it might be misinterpreted. And then he said rather go straight on to the topic that would be more useful.
他等于说，他的工作给研究生的，托马明把那科研你了，你对方他做牛马多，马工把那三马金了，你算多，你他没到对方当，他来对方那是不中了那把牛给我的，他那日报的你那工资报多少银子？你研究生的可能不是几天的是多？
When you talk about Lamrim, although as said before, Lamrim covers a raft of graded topics, but all these topics come under three headings. The one is called Ngejung, a sense of Ngejung. It has been translated as renunciation. It's a Ngejung means a lingering desire to get out of mundane existence, to get out of mundane existence permanently. Why? Because as long as one remains within the bounds of samsara, no matter where one is, samsaric life, by its very nature, is fraught with the suffering, and therefore, therefore, we need to realize what the situation is, and then, do you really like it, or do you really want to get out of it? And if you don't want to get out of it, then you need to develop a sense of repulsion, disenchantment to this mundane material existence.
아니 가서나 토마 메바동 토마 메바라 등지 동화지 동화 지위 동화 아니 가서는 차원 되지지 동화 등지지 위에 다 서서 오늘 쉬어 정을 내가 등에 내가 와 있어 다 예통 쳐야지 연구를 해서 저는 또는 대부분 이 주사 받았어 다.
So, as said before, since when have we existed? There's no beginning. How long do you think we will keep on existing? It depends on how soon you get out of it through spiritual realization. So, in all our beginningless existence, our life has been fraught with the three sufferings. In all lifetimes, we have experienced actual physical and psychological distress. And if not that, then we have been influenced, affected by what is called suffering of a change of the seeming pleasure into displeasure or pain. And thirdly, samsaric life is underpinned. The very fact that one exists in samsara with contaminated with afflicted body and mind itself has been called a suffering. Their mere existence has been called a suffering, and the name of that suffering is the suffering of a pervasive conditioning. So when we consider how all throughout beginningless time we have gone through the same process to the point of getting monotony, yet we don't feel monotonous. And when you think about that, in a really dispassionate, calm and collected way, you know, then a sense of weariness sets in. You become tired of this kind of meaningless, painful, unnecessary existence. And therefore, you think, is there a way out? I want to get out. And that sense of I want to get out is called Nijung. The second main topic that subsumes the raft of topics of Lamrim is Jangju Gisim, Bodhicitta. And so we need to develop Bodhicitta, but when it comes to developing Bodhicitta, you need to become mentally, you know, selfless. You become selflessly altruistic in your thinking, in your action, and in going out out of one's way in helping others. When in doing so, we are held back by what is called self-love, lopsided, okay, self-love. Or it is called self-cherishing, self-cherishing attitude, or self-centeredness. So although we do things under what is called under the guidance of enlightened self-interest, Buddhists called enlightened self-interest self-centeredness. Anything one does out of self-centeredness, although it is meant to bring happiness, ends up causing long-term problem. And therefore, we need to wake up to this reality and change the trend, move away from self-centeredness, open one's heart, and include others in it, in the pursuit of happiness.
ina danda suji go yete chashi zong anzo mewa te kar che bore se na rong jinzi danda le ane yen jinzi chuta jawa da shi yu se na jaji shuwa ina di shunga le.
If self-centeredness, which has been called in the West, you know, enlightened self-interest, is the right way, then now it's a high time that we had real positive benefit out of it, and because we have been associated, or rather self-centeredness has been our unparting companion throughout beginningless time, and to the point that now self-centeredness has become a perfect entity in us, and therefore if it is perfect and the right thing, then let's see some positive outcome deriving from, emanating from self-centeredness. If self-centeredness is the right approach, then we have far more self-centeredness than Buddhas. So we would be better off than Buddhas. Yet, we are far worse off, you know, far worse off than Buddhas, to the point that we don't even have a fraction of immense qualities Buddhas have. Why? What does it show? It shows that self-centeredness, enlightened self-interest, has not worked.
所以他那個選舉選的當中就是落上了當天的無趣吧,所以呢,他就會嘛就把他他的夢夢的現在的也是,他就會一直在講我的,等於他選舉選公公公你吃的他那上了當的開始嘛。So
Bodhicitta is the only way, okay, non-enlightened self-interest, if you like. Now, Bodhicitta is the only way to change the trend. And when you think of Bodhicitta, you never consider your own happiness. You consider happiness, welfare of others more than your own, and therefore to forego self and to embrace the happiness of others may become inconceivable at this stage of our growth. It may seem impossible, but nothing is impossible, for one thing with the mind is it can be bent when pressure is exerted. In other words, although our mind at the moment dominated by self-centeredness can be moved away from self-centeredness and channeled in the in bodhicitta, and although we may find it hard to start with, there is no excuse not to make a start.
是同安都循序善，生活的了，是同安都循序善，生活的了，那你现在没不一样的是，经营那安都不要呢，同时是也不实践没一把，那个呢就是的，其实做做速度，做完了点点也不是，实践刚开始速度，你怕妈妈就不计较嘛的，低点都有，所以呢，就以前的当然养循序善，那个没怎么那么的了。So
why do we all of a sudden or gradually become more community spirited or altruistic? Seen from a bigger seen from enlightened perspective, a bigger picture emerges, and the bigger picture is that one and all living beings, not just humans, one and all living beings throughout space, according to Buddhism, are closely related. In what way are they closely related? Buddhism says all beings have been one's closest relation. Who is one's closest relation? It couldn't be, nothing could be closer than the kind mother. Seen from Buddha's omniscient perspective, all living beings have been once a mother countless times, and therefore, you know, if you feel indebted to your mother, then indeed your heart would warm up to your mother.
그래서
So, as I said before, we have been affected. We have been affected by, you know, our self-centeredness in the annals of our beginningless existence. And self-centeredness, as we have just pointed out, has not been the right approach. It looks It looks desirable, attractive, but it has misled us. The only thing that can challenge, uproot self-centeredness is bodhicitta, bodhicitta. And therefore, bodhicitta is vital. So, bodhicitta is worth pursuing, is worth you know, worth pursuing, in that if you have a bodhicitta, nothing becomes a problem, and your heart becomes quite expansive, not narrow-minded with a limited space, as your heart doesn't become a narrow, myopic space only for one person. Your heart expands, and in that expansive heart, you think of the happiness of the greatest majority of beings. And when it comes to pursuing the greatest happiness of the greatest majority or greatest number, then the heart is prepared, willing to face any problem without any complaint, to the point that to promote and to seek happiness of all beings, if one has to go right down into the bottom of hell and remain there for as long as it needs for someone to be happy, the person with bodhicitta would be only too happy to do that. So, as I said, in this way, it is clear that when you have bodhicitta, nothing is a problem. So Buddhist teachings state that all major and minor spiritual realizations, Mahayana spiritual realization, invariably comes from bodhicitta. Without that, you know, gold elixir like a bodhicitta, without that elixir like a bodhicitta, no matter how long you may meditate, no matter what meditation you do, nothing will come off in terms of a spiritual realization. And so all Mahayana realizations are necessarily grounded in bodhicitta. Okay, materially speaking, if you have a sense of, if you have a social conscience, a conscience for the greater good of others, then you know, you somehow will always be at ease, regardless of problems happening around you, for nothing is considered a problem for you by the mind, so you will always be at ease. So, what is bodhicitta? What is the object of bodhicitta? And what Okay, what is the object of meditation of bodhicitta, and what number, what cognitive form mind takes when the mind becomes bodhicitta? Not that your mind and bodhicitta are separate. Your mind has to become bodhicitta. So when your mind becomes bodhicitta, what is the object? What does it focus on? And what form does it take when it becomes bodhicitta? What are the benefits of bodhicitta? What are the functions of bodhicitta? There are, again, a raft of topics. So we have no time, but these will be covered in time. But what is important to remember is the crucial importance of a bodhicitta for the happiness of self and others. Therefore, how nice it would be if we are at all times motivated by bodhicitta in everything we do from morning till night. So be always be motivated, ground what you do on in bodhicitta. Everything will go smoothly. The result will be beneficial. Now, let me talk about the third major topic that subsumes all the raft of topics of Lamrim. The third is called Yang Takpe Tawa, the right view. And the right view, again, is crucial because, as I said before, it is due to misunderstanding of the ground reality and forming wrong perspective that one has developed prejudices for and against. So we need to develop the right view to cut through prejudices for and against. For that, we need to understand the true nature of reality. So, for a Mahayana's person, they have two things that they must address to overcome. They are self-centeredness and grasping, self-grasping. Self-centeredness, as mentioned before, is the wrong approach, but given a nice name. And now, second thing is grasping, in other words, is a misunderstanding of the ontological status of phenomena. And that is, whilst things do not exist, while nothing animate, inanimate exists objectively, independently, intrinsically from their own side, without depending on anything, we are misled by a confusion into thinking that they exist in and of themselves, and that is called grasping at self. Self here refers to existence by itself, in and of itself. So the two, self-centeredness and self-grasping, or grasping at self-existence. I like the king and the minister, and you know, king and the minister, a bad king and an influential minister. So we all our practices, all Mahayana practices, the Lama says, must be geared to tackle these two.
Tani karsen kuzo nanzu kuta neje yena minute ne kuzo dame tu bilo hiyon tabe tawares. Rong jinzu kuzo neje yena minute ta yishunju senres. Teni yu kani hani ne chi karsen na tawa chimbi chi dan ne tawa tabe jero nungo ma de shin kago res.
So, the antidote to self-grasping is wisdom or the knowledge of emptiness, emptiness of intrinsic existence. The antidote to self-centeredness is bodhicitta, or enlightened, some have said enlightened spirit. Whatever you want to call it, in Sanskrit is called bodhi. Bodhi means enlightenment. Citta means the mind. So, whatever we do in our practice, we need to be motivated by bodhicitta, and we need to be educated by wisdom, understanding true nature of reality. So all these three major spiritual realizations, they are called the three principles, three principal paths, three main paths. Renunciation, which is a lingering sense of sickness with regard to mundane existence, a sickening attitude, a sickening disillusioned awareness with regard to mundane existence, and bodhicitta and right view. Tisum karcharasam.
No.
Tisum di.
Same.
Yeah, okay. So these three realizations are possible. Why? Because we have a mind that is full of potential and that is malleable, that can be fashioned in any way. So our mind can be fashioned by these, so that the mind becomes bodhicitta and endowed with the knowledge of wisdom, sorry, the knowledge about the nature of reality, and motivated by that sense of disillusionment or disenchantment. So these three things are vital, and these need to come from within our mind. Therefore, mind is important in the practice.
jichi tonya sona tanya te ngi ngara go sona china ne zambi ne ti kala ta mi ngara nasi te leka ti cheshu re sang du se ten bezo china ne tante chenpo re se.
So for me, I think nothing is as important in the world as getting to know who you are in terms of your mind. Who you are is to look into your mind, and what is your mind like, and then change it for the better. That is the most important task at hand. If everybody realizes that, then the world would be a much better place. So I said in the beginning, before we do anything, we need to have right motivation, And I've spent the entire time why we need to have right motivation. I've explained that with reference to the importance of mind and how the mind can be changed for the better through the three principal paths. So